Joel, best buddy, how is it going?
I'm doing great, my friend. And guess what tomorrow is? Your birthday.
It's Christmas Eve, which also happens to be my birthday. That's right.
All right. I want to know, how tragic was that in your childhood that your birthday fell on Christmas Eve?
Have we talked about this before?
We have a little bit, but
I feel like we have.
I want our listeners to know.
When it's all you know, buddy, it's all you know. Yeah. You know? And so in my mind, it was a good thing because that meant I was able to get some really huge gifts as a kid. But typically you and I, our families get together on Christmas Eve. We kind of get together for a Christmas/birthday celebration. We always have a fun time. And with it being around the holidays like this, this is one of the reasons we have a bestie episode for folks. We're talking about cultivating a healthy view of work this episode. And actually, I've got a question for you. Do you feel like you have a healthy view of work? Well, specifically, when you're not working, do you feel like that you're able to not work?
That's a good question. That's a really good question.
It's not quite the episode, because in the episode we're talking about, like, views kind of towards work. But what about turning work on and off?
Yeah, I think that's become harder, right? Especially with email in our pockets and constant access from employers.
Right.
I had to delete Slack off my phone. I get text occasionally from someone at work, and they're like, have you seen my email? And if it was sent after 5 p.m., no, I'm sorry. I haven't. Yep. And I will check it again tomorrow morning at 9 a.m.
Good man.
I'm trying to be better at that. And every once in a while, right, it can get in the way of something that's important. But for the most part, it's just way better. And I think for me, I've had to focus more in on creating strong breaks between my work and my personal life, just for my own sanity. And I think probably a lot of other people feel that way. And I think a lot of people might say, that's not possible for me.
Right.
But I think for most people, they should challenge themselves to see if it is possible, because it's probably more possible than you think.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think boundaries are incredibly helpful and important when it comes to fostering and creating healthy views towards work, right? Because if it's constantly encroaching on your life in other areas, it might be easy to resent it, right? Or to feel like it's something that's consuming everything. So I do think that's something to keep in mind as we launch into this bestie episode. But, you know, in the end, though, I will say, too, how thankful I am that you and I have the ability to work on something that means so much to both of us, right? It's work that is meaningful, that we both derive a lot of personal fulfillment from, and we're able to do that by helping others. And not only that, we're able to do this together. You know, like, who is able to work on something that they love with their best bud? I'm incredibly thankful for this podcast, as well as for all of our listeners out there who listen to us yammer on every week.
Yeah, me too, man. It really is. We're fortunate to get to do something that we love this much. And so without further ado, this episode is in particular about cultivating a healthy view of work. We hope it's helpful for you, especially as maybe you're thinking about what your job looks like as 2020 is wrapping up, and maybe, you know, what career pursuits you want to embark on in 2021. So here is that bestie episode right now. Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're discussing cultivating a healthy view of work.
All right, Joel, we are back from the break. And we're actually back from Christmas break as well.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to everyone out there. Hope you guys had an excellent holiday and it was spent with people that you cared about and just lots of fun downtime.
Aren't you hoping that I had a wonderful birthday too?
Kind of. We celebrated together, dude. We always celebrate your birthday together.
My birthday's on Christmas Eve, and lately, our families have gotten together, which is an awesome way for us to kind of grow up a little bit. You know, like when you're kind of single and you're younger, I guess, it's kind of expected that you always spend a lot of your holidays with your family, probably like you should. But now that we are kind of growing up, we've got our own kids and we are starting to set our own traditions as individual families. But then collectively, the How to Money family, we bring everyone all together and we always have a good time.
Yeah, and we can celebrate holidays however we want now because we're adults. Nobody can tell us what to do.
Well, our wives can tell us what to do. So
that's true. That's a good point. That's a good point. I wanted to let everyone know, Matt, that if they got a gift card specifically over the holidays, that they should consider spending it really soon. And that's because there are over $1 billion in unused gift cards lying around in people's sock drawers. That's such a bummer because that's free money, right? And so gift cards can oftentimes be a thoughtful gift, but it turns out that the recipient doesn't always use it. So if you got a gift card, make sure you put it in your wallet, in your purse, make sure it's in a usable place so that you can get to it within, you know, the first few weeks of the new year. use that gift card, because I don't want your gift card to add to that number of unused gift cards. We actually want you to get use out of the presents that you've been given.
Yeah, man. Use it or lose it.
Yeah, and if it's to a place that you're not super into, consider selling it on the secondary gift card market, right? Like, seriously, there are websites out there where you can sell your gift card. In particular, there's an aggregator called giftcardgranny.com.
Gift card what?
Gift card granny.
Granny?
Granny.
Nice.
So you can go there.
I really hope it was a grandma that actually started this site, because that would be awesome.
I hope so too. I'm not sure exactly how it began, but it's an awesome site. It aggregates all the gift card resale sites, and you can find, you know, what resale site will give you the most money for your gift card. So giftcardgranny.com, it's a cool website, and it's cool if you want to buy discounted gift cards too.
It's like the gift card website to rule them all.
Exactly.
So a few weeks ago, I mentioned how I've been delaying my coffee drinking. And the reason for that is because I found it more effective for me to have my coffee in the afternoons, like around 2 or 3 when I get sleepy, essentially. And it also saves on money because I'm not drinking that second cup or that third cup. And we kind of like the nicer coffees, and it's kind of expensive, you know, getting a pound of coffee at your coffee shop. But I have missed having a hot drink in the morning. It's just something about that. And especially in the wintertime in general, sitting at your desk, it's just nice having a hot drink. It's one of the things I like.
I completely agree.
Are you with me?
Yeah, that's part of the reason why it's harder for me. Like, I've heard you talk about it, and my thought process is, well, I don't want to give up coffee, not because of the effect that caffeine has on me, but honestly, just the sensation of drinking a hot beverage.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so the whole reason I bring this up then is because I'm totally hacking my hot drink intake by just drinking hot water.
That's weird, man.
I don't know if it's as weird as grannycreditcard.com. So what do you think? Is this frugal or is this cheap? Me drinking hot. So I'm still having my coffee in the afternoons. And so I'm still getting my caffeine. I'm still getting my delicious pour over coffee.
I guess my question would be, is drinking hot water pleasurable in any way, form or fashion?
Well, I am happy to say that yes. And this is why I've kept it up for several weeks now. But I don't know what it is, but having a hot cup of water. Gosh, every time I say it, I sound like such a cheapskate.
It sounds really weird, dude.
Like, I fill up a pint glass, so a solid 16 ounces of water, I throw it in the microwave, 2 minutes, it comes out like steamy, like piping hot, and I grab it with my hands, it gets my hands warm, I go sit in my cold office because we live in an old drafty house, and I get to sip on that, and I drink way more water, so I know I'm healthier, I'm hydrated, better for my throat, you know, it's just better for everything when you stay hydrated, and it still satisfies that warmth that I'm kind of looking for in the middle of the winter. I'm sitting there on the computer, my hands are freezing, right? Because I'm not wearing gloves, I guess. Do you wear gloves when you type? No.
No.
No one does that. But yeah, I just wanted to share that with folks. It sounds totally weird. I wanted to specifically share that with you because I thought you might, I don't know, man, you might be into that.
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, I don't think I'll give it a try, but there's a chance that I do, and I'll let you know.
Well, you got that office. You're rocking that office coffee, right?
That's true. Yeah. Which is, honestly, it's pretty rough most of the time. So.
But still, it's there, and it's hot, and yeah, it's fairly fresh, I assume.
True. Yeah. Well, sometimes. All right. So, okay. There's something on the coffee note. There's something interesting I found out from a coworker just a few days ago that I'd never heard before. He told me that eating an apple, and he said in particular Granny Smith apple, but then I did a little research and it just seemed like it was any apple.
Okay.
But that had a similar effect as drinking a cup of coffee. There's something about eating an apple that gives you that boost in energy and that kind of perk that caffeine gives you.
Is it the sugars?
So in particular, yeah, it is the sugars that are one of the main reasons that apples have a similar effect to coffee. And you know, studies also show that the vitamins from apples, specifically the skin of the apple, they're released slowly throughout the body, making you feel more awake over time.
Nice. I love it, man.
Who knew?
I mean, I've always enjoyed apples. I mean, I eat an apple maybe like every other day around lunchtime, so... Maybe that's why I haven't needed my coffee until a little bit later on, too.
Yeah, I eat apples almost every day, too.
Do you really?
Yeah, and sometimes I feel bad because I don't think they're quite as healthy as carrots, and carrots are way cheaper, too. And so I kind of alternate, but I feel like...
Except apples are delicious, dude.
Except for apples are the best.
Yeah.
And so now that I know that they've got this kind of quality, too, I'm not going to feel as bad.
Makes you feel better?
Yeah.
Ooh, Aldi lately has had a really good sale on apples. Did you buy a bunch of those?
No. Wait, in the bags, they sell the bags apples? I think Emily picked up a bag maybe.
Yeah, Kate bought 2 bags because they were super cheap. They were so freaking good. I don't even know what kind they are, but...
I will say, I'm a sucker for hand-picking my apples. So when I go to Kroger, I could spend like 10 minutes in front of the apples.
What?
Hand-selecting each one. Dude, yeah. Are you kidding me? There's something that brings so much satisfaction about looking at all the apples and picking out the 7 that look the absolute most primo in the produce section.
Yeah, you and your granny Apple habits, your granny gift card.
Oh, it's so nice.
Who's got time? I mean,
I don't know, man. I can't do the bagged apples usually. They're not the same. When I handpick the perfect apple, it's 10 times better than like what ends up in the bag. Promise you.
All right, next time you're ever at my house, I'll let you have one of these apples from Aldi.
We'll do an apple taste test.
Ooh, apple off.
I'll taste your hot water too.
Ooh. Dude, so going back to that, I made Kate try it today because I realized I've been doing it for a couple weeks now and I've actually gotten to the point where I enjoy it. And I thought, Kate, you've got to try this. And she looked at me and kind of nodded her head as if she sort of understood what I was saying. So there's hope out there because she's way less weird than I am. She's sort of a litmus test.
She's like the normal one of the family.
Yeah, she doesn't put up with weird stuff normally.
I don't know, man. She married you.
She married me.
That's true. All right. So let's tell everyone the beer that we're drinking today. And it is a Christmas-inspired beer from our buddy John. We've had one of his beers on the show before. He is a home brewer right up the road from where we are in Atlanta. Man, his beers are epic. Yeah. And so this beer, we wanted to share it with you guys the day after Christmas. It's called Christmas Land. And it's a Hawaiian Christmas Stout.
Yeah. And I always like looking at the labels because I'm a visual kind of guy. It's got a sort of demented looking Santa gate, like a funhouse kind of mouth, you know, like
yeah.
You like walk through the mouth of a clown and you're walking into it like a funhouse. It's kind of got like a demented Christmas theme park looking going on to it.
Yeah. And like a snowman that looks like he might, I don't know, put an axe in your neck or something like that.
A little crazy looking roller coaster in the back.
Yeah. So, and if people want to know what these labels look like, the stuff that we're drinking, they want to see the visuals, follow us on Instagram at @howtomoneypod. We post lots of kind of fun pictures of the background stuff of the podcast on there.
And we kind of just covered this, but I wanted to mention this isn't a beer that you're going to be able to find at your local store. A lot of the beers that we do enjoy on the show are craft beers that are widely available at grocery stores. But then sometimes we get some extra special beers like this. So we'll be sure to get some beers that you can find locally here soon enough. But today, man, I am excited to be sipping this delicious beer from our buddy.
All right, so let's take our first sip and... like we've been doing lately, we'll give one word to describe the beer we're drinking.
Let's do it. Cheers, man. So the first thing I'll mention is that when I swirl this in the glass, the beer is so thick, it coats the glass and it colors it like it's stained glass or something like that. It is. I know this is going to be a thick old beer.
Yeah, specifically when I poured this, it felt like I was pouring 10W40 like straight into my engine block, right? Like it was so thick and viscous with like no head to it at all. So what's the first word that comes to mind when you take a sip of this beer?
Wow, dude, that is so good. Okay, one word, decadent.
That's a good one. And actually kind of in the realm of normalcy, which is odd for you.
We're talking about me being such a weirdo, so I kind of want to bring it home a little bit and choose a word that most folks might understand from the get-go.
Well, my word is for this beer is oily. And we'll tell you more about why we use those words to define this beer at the end of the show when we give our tasting notes.
How the tables have turned, weirdo.
All right, Matt. So let's get on to the subject at hand today, cultivating a healthy view of work. And you and I, man, we both feel really passionate about this topic. We feel like we have a lot to say about this. And because there is a major problem in our culture with the predominant ways that people view work, the common cultural misconceptions of what work is supposed to be, why we do it, is it good? And there are just a lot of terrible tropes floating around the internet in regards to what work is. And we want to challenge those misconceptions and kind of help people understand how to approach work so that it can be not only utilitarian in providing value for your life and income, but also talking about how to create a meaningful sense of work in what you're doing day to day so that it isn't just mundane drudgery.
And so a couple examples, I guess, of those misguided views, right? Like the sort of what we would say are incorrect approaches towards work. First off, I would mention the traditional view, like more of a traditional view of work, which is you don't have to love your job. In fact, you can even hate your job, but you're going to do it anyway. You're going to make a lot of money. And that's just what work is all about to me.
That's life. Company man, toe the company line.
Yeah, exactly. Company man, it kind of goes back to more of like a baby boomer generation where like loyalty and stability, just these sort of things mattered way more. And yeah, that's more, I guess, of a traditional old school view of work. And then to counter that, I think we can present the more millennial view towards work, which is...
YOLO?
Exactly. It's YOLO. It's, I've got to find the perfect job for me. I've got to find the job that is my calling.
Satisfies my soul in the deepest reaches.
Yeah. Creatively, Oh, and by the way, it also pays the best of any job I could possibly get.
Plus, I get 10 weeks of vacation so I can go to Thailand whenever I want.
I mean, we're making fun of ourselves. We're millennials as well. But typically, that is the attitude towards the millennial view of work, is that it's got to be perfect. You have to find all sort of satisfaction and fulfillment doing that job. And I think both of those, there are certain things about them that are good. But if you subscribe to either one of those 100%, we think you'll end up misguided. And you may not quite have the healthy view towards work that you need to.
Yeah, Matt. And in our shifting economy, we kind of have to come up with a different philosophy of what work looks like, because the company man, toe the company line, the old school view of work that you mentioned, that just doesn't work anymore, because right. Loyalty was valued by our parents' generation, in part because there was loyalty on the other side from the employer. And we now know in a changing economy, in a vastly different economy from what it used to be, much more worldwide economy, technological changes, AI, robotics being introduced, that jobs are far less steady. Employers are far less steady than they were 30 or 40 years ago. So we have to come up with a different philosophy that helps us frame work properly while understanding the necessity of it.
Yeah, man. So obviously this is very timely, right? For younger millennials who are getting into the workplace for the first time, considering what it is that kind of drives them aside from the paycheck. But what we're going to be talking about is incredibly appropriate for older generations as well, because these principles that we're discussing applies to you regardless of what stage of work you're in. It's not something that you have to subscribe to from the very beginning. It's something that you can realize doesn't fit anymore. And you think, man, I really need to shift my thoughts on how I approach work. I'll say from my own personal experience that I didn't give much thought to work. It wasn't until I was doing it myself and I was in it for a couple of years did I start to question, well, why is it that I'm doing this? I think a lot of times when I don't give something thought, by default, you subscribe to your parents' views and approach towards work. And not that that's wrong, but it's just sort of a default, right? It's something that you're doing, you're not really thinking too much about. It's just how you were raised. In some cases, that's probably awesome because maybe you had some awesome parents. But then on the other hand, it may not be a healthy view towards work. And you know, there might be some adjustment that you find is necessary in order for you to find your work fulfilling.
Yeah, so this episode, if you are a younger worker in the workforce or whether you've been in the workforce for 20 or 30 years, there are a lot of things we're going to help you think through in order to make sure that you are working in an intentional manner and that you can kind of develop your own philosophy of work. And in particular, our healthy view of work boils down to two essential points, and we're going to get to those right after the break.
All right, Joel. So part of the reason we wanted to talk about cultivating a healthy view of work is because of the FIRE movement. And we've talked about this before, but that's the Financial Independence Retire Early movement.
And the FIRE movement, so hot right now.
So hot.
As Hansel would say in Zoolander.
It's got a lot of coverage recently in national media. And the philosophy of work varies greatly in that movement. And so even within that subset of work hard, retire early, folks have a lot of different views towards work. So it turns out that there are unhealthy views of work just, you know, all over the place.
Yeah. And especially in that movement, right, Matt? Like, I feel like there's so much we love about the FIRE movement. There's so many people in that movement that we identify with. And the general concept, like we've talked about in our financial independence episode that we did, is an amazing one. Yes. Like the goal of saving and investing well for the future should be financial independence. That's a great goal to have and one that we should all strive for, I think.
But how you get there, that's what varies so greatly, and that's what can be unhealthy, right?
Yeah, and specifically, the FIRE movement can lead to, if you're not careful, a completely unhealthy view of work that leads to maybe working at something that you hate just for a paycheck or working way too many hours and enjoying the good things that exist in your life.
And so let's go ahead and share now the sort of two main points that we feel are essential when it comes to cultivating that healthy view of work. Those two things are that work is a wonderful thing, but then also that work isn't everything. So I'll go ahead and cover the first one, that it's a great thing. Work isn't inherently bad. A lot of times folks sort of see it as this evil, right? Like this necessary evil. It's something that you have to do. It's this mundane drudgery.
Working for the weekend.
Yeah, exactly. But we all have talents and different abilities to play our role, to work in contributing to the world and making it a better place. And so regardless of what it is that you do, your work is important. Like there's value there. And by creating and by contributing and by whatever it is that you do, you know, we bring order out of chaos.
I think that's a really important point to make, Matt, yeah. because I think there are people maybe working at a job that they feel like is not important. And
right.
Or they feel like that what they're doing every day isn't making a difference. But I think if we realize that work in and of itself is a way of contributing to the world and making it a better place, if we have that sort of mentality going to work, it doesn't matter whether you are scrubbing toilets or whether you're putting out a subpar podcast. Like either way, your work is meaningful because work in and of itself is meaningful. It is good for us. It is not a necessary evil. It is a necessary fundamental element of life for us as humans.
Yeah, there's something that's really hard to quantify, doing a job well done, right? When you know that there's something that you've worked hard at and that you've done well as you can at least, and that there's value that people are gleaning from that. Again, it's hard to quantify aside from the money, which you can obviously quantify, but there's something aside from that when you know that you're helping the people around you and providing a service or value or a product, something, it's a good thing.
Yeah, and I think too, the paycheck, right? That's a wonderful thing as well. That paycheck, that provision that you're able to bring in for your family, for your loved ones, that's a necessary and important part of work. Right, you are working in order to not only provide a service and use your talents, but you're also working in order to provide for the people close to you.
Yeah.
And I think it's a meaningful element of work that people, in their desire to be completely fulfilled by what they do, just know that, you know, a paycheck, that the number that you get every 2 weeks in your direct deposit, that doesn't define you. That is not what defines work as good or bad. But that basic element of provision that is attached to work is a really important one and worthy of mention.
Yeah, and so the characteristic that we're portraying, right, of work is that it's noble, that it's something that is good, and that it's not something that we're trying to escape from. And so going back to the financial independence example, a lot of times work, especially at early years in life that are high-paying jobs especially, can be viewed as a sort of necessary evil and that it's something that you're trying to escape. And so basically, you're just trying to work as hard as you can for as little period as possible while you're making as much money as possible to eventually escape from work. So that's something that you can leave behind. And what we're saying, though, is that work isn't something you're going to leave behind. Or maybe you should consider not leaving it behind.
Maybe that's not a great aspiration.
Yeah, exactly. Work in and of itself is something that is good. And maybe that would necessitate a career change or a job change to something that you find slightly more fulfilling. And we'll get to more of that later. But yeah, work is a wonderful thing, and it is not something that you should try to be escaping.
Yeah, it shouldn't be denigrated. But also, work isn't everything. And that's another huge point. And I think, Matt, I don't know about you, but it sure seems like the last generation fell under, you know, these lines, that work seemed to be a little more all-encompassing. You almost dedicated your life to a company, and that, in retrospect, seems unhealthy. But while work is wonderful, like we just mentioned, work isn't everything. And so, yeah, let's flesh that out.
Yeah. So doing something, you know, you enjoy or feel passionate about is not a necessity. There are plenty of people out there in the world doing jobs just because of their skill or their work history, something that they've done for a while. And so they're pretty good at it and they're used to it, or for whatever reason, right? But they may not necessarily love that job to their core.
And there are a lot of ways to find value because of your skill or your work history or just developing a competency and getting better at it. That is, I think, a core essential value of work is getting better day by day. And you find joy in kind of the mastery that you're able to achieve while you're working.
Yeah. And so a work-life balance is increasingly important to us in our generation. The different papers out there love to talk about how millennials love that work-life balance. Balance between finding fulfillment, though, in your work, but also knowing that you have to have a life at the same time. That's the balance that you want to strike. And we're not saying that that's easy, but that's the balance that we're trying to strike. We are striving to find our identity not only in our work. Certainly what you do has an impact on you and how you view the world, but that cannot be the sole source of your identity and your fulfillment.
And the truth is, recognizing that work isn't everything means that your happiness level actually has less to do with the actual work itself than you think it does. You can find ways to love what you do, even if it isn't a passion job, right? Even if it's not the greatest job that you can ever imagine, you can find ways to get better at and enjoy the work that you're currently doing. even if you're attempting to transition at some point to do something that you love more.
Yeah, Joel, and that specifically makes me think of a recent episode we did on, well, we called it Buying Happiness, like your brain and money. But that entire episode was all about hedonic adaptation.
Fancy scientific term.
Yeah. Hedonic adaptation. If you haven't listened to that one, by the way, honestly, I think that's one of our most important episodes, like in the past 6 months.
Yeah, I think unless you understand the way that your brain works in that, unless you understand your bent as a human,
right,
it's going to be really hard to kind of counteract those natural instincts. And so, yeah, I think it's a really important concept to understand because it is the way humans act when they're thinking about money, the future, their own happiness.
Right.
And we have to understand that that's true about ourselves in order to make changes that will be able to benefit us positively.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And so back to like work, right? In a job that may not be, at least on paper, the most fulfilling job. So we talked about buying that happiness and that hedonic adaptation. And we cited a study in that episode where it was talking about how that we have control over about 40% of our own happiness and only about 10% is affected by actual circumstances. And so in this case, I think our jobs, you know, whatever perfect or not perfect job that you might have, that's only 10%.
And then another 20% set by the craft beer that you're drinking right now.
But what we're saying, though, is that you basically have control over 40% of your own happiness, and that in reality, your job or your circumstances has a very small impact on your happiness. In fact, about 10%. And so just keep that in mind when it comes to the mindset of, oh, I've got to find the perfect job, or I've got to find the calling or where I feel the most fulfilled. That is not necessarily true. Like Joel said a second ago, it has way less to do with the work, the actual work itself, and it has way more to do with your mindset and just how you approach it.
Yeah. So if you feel like you're in the position of feeling you need to run away from work, that your job is killing you, that your life would be so much better, right, if you didn't have to go to work every day, I feel like thinking about work in these terms and seeing how you can approach your job, thinking of it as a wonderful thing that brings provision to yourself and your family and gives you that ability to contribute to society and make the world a better place. But also realizing that work isn't everything. If you can kind of hold those things simultaneously together in your life, it can help you reframe the job that you're currently at and also help you set goals to think about what sort of work you ultimately want to do and that you feel like you'd be better at and potentially provide more value to the place where you currently work.
Dude, this makes me think of Mike Rowe. Everyone knows Mike Rowe. If you don't know, though, Dirty Jobs was his television show. And essentially, he rides along with somebody that has typically a really dirty or gross job.
Yeah, they're like cleaning septic tanks
like
trudging through sewer systems, whatever it may be.
Yeah, like things that you would typically say are disgusting and terrible. But in this TED Talk, it's beautiful and it's just really inspiring. But he talks about how these folks, these employees, these workers that are doing these jobs have found value in what they do. And to the eyes of society and the world who sort of puts down work, especially hard work, hard, dirty labor, he raises it and he elevates it and says that, look, this is something that these people have figured out that A, they can do well. And for whatever reasons, they found value in that and they prize that and they're proud of what they do. But I would encourage anyone who's heard of Mike Rowe or even not, but be sure to check out that link. It's a TED, we'll put it up in our show notes on the website, but it's the TED Talk and it's kind of old. I think it's like 10 years old or something like that, but it's just fantastic. And if you are in a position where you feel like your job isn't fulfilling or, you know, you feel that whatever it is that you do is kind of being put down by society and just the sort of general attitude of our culture.
I feel like Mike is one of the best speakers on work today. He just thinks about it, conceptualizes it well. And for me, I love what I do. I love my day job. But even I get bummed sometimes and it doesn't feel like I want it to feel, or that day just didn't go very well. And it always helps for me to kind of come back to this framework. Like, okay, what's important about what I do? How am I growing? How am I serving and helping? And you know what? It reframes a bad day or a bad week or a crummy situation or a task that I don't really want to perform. And it kind of helps me look at the overall ways that I'm able to serve others in my job and even just honestly serve my family through the provision that the job brings. Yeah. It's such a good and powerful way to think about my work because it's easy, even if you like what you do, to get bummed out, like maybe on a day by day basis based on just the circumstances that are happening. And it just really helps to have this framework to hold your job up against to see all the benefits that it is bringing into your life.
We're going to talk about ways that you can move towards a healthier view of work. And we're going to get to that right after this short break. Okay, so when it comes to creating your own philosophy towards work, when it comes to cultivating, right, your own healthy view of work, what you need to keep in mind is that it's a balance. Again, work isn't this terrible thing that we're trying to escape from, but it's also not everything. It shouldn't be the only thing that defines you. So here is what you need to remember. Joel, kick it off.
Yeah, Matt, it's important to find fulfillment in your work, in your daily job, by taking stock of what you actually do and the value that you do bring to others. So like I was talking about, that helps me reframe my job on the days that I don't feel like your feelings don't always align with what's true, right? So some days I just feel like I didn't do a good job, like what I did didn't matter. It wasn't a fun day, right? Maybe I didn't have a great interaction with a coworker, or the day just fell flat, right? It just didn't go the way I wanted it to. And I'm just down about my job in general. And I don't have many of those days, but I do have those days. And so by doing this, by kind of taking stock and writing those things down, what do I actually do that matters? And what value am I bringing to others in my job? That can kind of help make a potentially mundane job truly rewarding and satisfying in a way that you wouldn't have seen before if you don't kind of think about it in those terms. Think about your job only as a checklist of tasks that you are able to check off. I mean, that's not helpful. Work is so much more meaningful than just a checklist.
And something else to keep in mind too is that it's just amazing, right? That we have the flexibility to choose a work, that we have options. And so we need to appreciate that. And most of human history didn't have the option to choose work that they want to do and work that they didn't want to do. Like they were just concerned with surviving, right? Like they just didn't want to die of like dysentery, like an Oregon Trail.
Or familial expectations were higher. And you worked in the same work that your father did. And oftentimes many women weren't allowed to work or weren't allowed to work in certain occupations. And right. So that sucks. And so it's just amazing. Let's take a little bit of time to think about the fact that whether you're college educated or not, doors are open in today's society that wouldn't have been open to so many of us 100, 200, 300 years ago. And it's just kind of amazing that we have that ability, this culture and this free market system, that we're able to start our own business, create our own thing and put it out there in the world and kind of see what happens. And man, I just think it's so cool and worth kind of reveling in that reality.
And so something else to consider when you're creating a healthier view towards work is ask yourself the question, do I have a life outside of work? Considering that we spend so much time on the clock working, it's not a surprise that we'd be tempted into putting too much of our self-worth into our work. You know, we spend half of our waking hours doing a task, whatever it is that your job is, right? And man, for me personally, finding too much of my self-worth and my identity in my work was largely related to my age, like a life stage sort of thing. And so I know for me early on, right, I didn't have as much going on. And so for me, being a creative sort of photographer, that was a huge hat that I wore, because I didn't have that many other hats. I didn't have that many responsibilities. And because I didn't have that many responsibilities, the few responsibilities that I did have were a big deal to me. And unfortunately, I think they became overly important. And I think that that's just something you gain with time and just with getting a little bit older, right? Like now I'm married, I've got kids, I'm a neighbor, I'm a board member, I'm a best friend, right? That's you. But there's other poles on my life. And because of that, it's not that I don't work as hard as I used to in my job. I still work crazy hard in doing what I do. However, I don't find my identity tied up into that. And I'm able to do really good work and work just as hard, but just with a proper and more healthy perspective. I have a better vantage now than I did, I guess, more at the beginning of my career. And it's just kind of amazing to see how just the progression of time, right? Like there's wisdom in years. And I just hope that I realize that even now still, that there's still so much more to learn as I continue to age. But yeah, it's crazy just how our views of work and jobs change over time. And hopefully, you know, they change for the better.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this is the right way to put it or not, but I think it's important to take pride in your work, but not to be prideful about your work.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
That's great.
I think it, oftentimes it can be the other way around. And I found that to be true, especially in my younger self, that it was easy to be kind of prideful about what I did and take less pride in the actual doing and creating and work itself. So I think ways to kind of avoid that trap are to look outside of your job and look for the things that do bring you joy and add value to your life. That's stuff like relationships, important activities that you can be involved in, causes that you can participate in that bring joy to others, not just to yourself. It's easy to look to a job for that sense of fulfillment. You might be able to get that temporarily, but ultimately it doesn't provide it over the long haul.
Right.
And you're going to have those bad days, like I said, even in a job that you love or you feel called to or something like that, or you feel deeply passionate about, even if you're one of the fortunate people to get to work at a job where you feel like that's the case, you're going to have those down times. And if you don't have a framework and if you don't have those other things in your life that matter on top of it, it's going to be really hard to get through those tough times.
Yeah. And all that to say too, that it's okay to love your work and to love your job. Especially early on when you're starting something new, like a new position, or even harder to not be excited about is when you're starting a new business, like something that you are pouring yourself into. It is okay and expected that you would be crazy excited about that and that you're going to be pouring a disproportionate amount of yourself into that and finding, you know, a large amount of your identity in that as well. But just keep that in mind and know that hopefully that's maybe for a shorter period of time, that you can hopefully get to a more healthy and balanced point. And also too, sort of similar to that, I think it's okay for folks who are really into their work, for their work and for their job to kind of be the initial structure of those additional things, like relationships, activities, and causes that you just mentioned, Joel. But just know that those things should be outside of your actual work. You might consider them your work friends, but hopefully they're not just your work friends, they're your friend friends.
They turn into real friends.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it's okay for that structure and for you to find fulfillment and for you to find ways to get involved with your community, all these things through the organization of your work. But that hopefully that expands beyond the walls of the office.
And I think it's important too that you said it is an ebb and flow, because yeah. I think there are times, there are going to be seasons where months or years where work seems to take like an elevated place in your life. And then there are going to be other seasons where work is demoted because of other things happening that take on more importance. Maybe it's to spend more time with your young children. Maybe it's a health struggle of a family member and you just have to be there more for that. Or maybe it's just a shift in priorities in general, you know, whatever it is. But you have to be willing to let it ebb and flow in that way. And I feel like cultivating a healthy view of work will allow for you to have that change over time, that ebb and flow. And if you don't, it's going to be hard. If it's really rigid philosophy of work that doesn't allow for any deviation over time and for different seasons, it's going to be a heck of a lot harder. So cultivating a healthy view of work also realizes that ebb and flow is something that's going to happen. And speaking of ebbing and flowing, I think it's really important for people to consider ways to cut out unnecessary work that they have in their lives. We all remember going to school and our teachers giving us busy work. It was literally something just to keep us busy so we didn't destroy the classroom while they were grading papers, right? And busy work is something that we find ourselves getting into even in professional work, in the workforce, whether it's our own business or whether we're working for somebody else. It's really easy to find things that occupy our time but aren't necessarily moving the needle or changing the bottom line. There are rote habits that we get into. They are ways that we work inefficiently. And many of those tasks or the things that we're doing are just things that we should cut out altogether. And Matt, we had a recent hangout, a podcast meetup here in Atlanta at a local brewery. And there's this awesome dude, Bradley, a listener.
Bradley.
Yeah, a listener to the show. And we were talking about kind of how he structures his work. And I loved his story, man. He was saying that he used to work 8 hours for this one company, and then he was able to get it to where he could work from home. And he realized that he could get all of the things he needed to get done in essentially like 4 hours. And so
nice.
That's awesome. Yeah, he was able to work half days, whereas going to the office, he had to like look busy. But to his bosses working from home, they were still getting the same amount of productivity out of it.
Right, right.
And then so he realized, well, all right, I'm going to ask this job if I can go part-time. And he took on two more jobs with different companies that he could employ that same skill set and he was able to massively improve what he earned and massively decrease the amount of time that he had to work. It was just kind of inspiring to see, okay, yeah, you're right. There's a lot of wasted time and effort when it comes to work. And if you can figure out a creative way to minimize how much you're working so that you're amplifying the things that bring the most value to your employer and you're minimizing those things that are just time wasters and time sucks and don't do anything, it's just interesting to see how Bradley kind of created a work environment that was so much better for him and still provides a lot of value out there in the economy. Yeah, and his whole reason for that, Matt, was truly because he had a newborn son and he wanted to spend more time with his son. And he realized not only was he able to cut down on his overall work hours. And so now he says he wakes up at 7, he does his morning routine, he works from 8 to noon or 8 to 1 at the latest, and then he has the rest of the afternoon to hang out with his family. And so he's working more jobs.
Oh, that's awesome.
Than he was, but he's working fewer hours and he's spending, you know, more time than he was able to before on that life outside of work with his family. And that obviously is like a huge benefit to his life.
Nice, man. I'm jealous of that life hack and optimization that he was able to do. Something that you also want to keep in mind when you're cultivating that healthy view towards work is that to know that it is okay to be ambitious and to challenge yourself. And so keep your mind open and look for the new opportunities as you grow. So obviously, this could be inside your current company, like taking a managerial role, or it could even be outside doing a side hustle, or, you know, maybe even starting your own legit small business. It's okay to work hard. We're not trying to say that you have to only have a life outside of work. Work is important too, and that's what's so maybe difficult about this topic is that it's a balance. We're saying that find fulfillment in your work, but also find fulfillment outside of your work. Bottom line, it's tricky. And it's difficult to maintain that balance, but it's something that overall, when it comes to your view of work, that you're striving to maintain.
Yeah, and also consider moving towards a career or a job that provides, you know, more day-to-day fulfillment. If you truly feel a lack of enjoyment and can't find much gratitude in what you are doing day-to-day, well, I mean, I think there are ways to improve on that right now in what you're doing, like we've said. But it's also okay to start working towards another career or another job where you feel like you can be of more service and finding a career that does seem to reflect your innate gifts, maybe a little bit better. But just realize too that the grass isn't always greener and that shifting careers might not bring you the happiness that you think it's going to, because a job, although a wonderful thing, like we said, it's not everything. And that new job, in all likelihood, isn't going to change your whole life in the ways that you might think it does, you know, from the outside looking in. So I want to mention that when I was first starting out, I wanted to work in radio. That was truly something I felt kind of called to do. That was truly a career that resonated with me deeply. And I loved the medium. I loved the impact that you could have through like long form audio content. I just thought it was so cool. But for a long time, I had to work two jobs. I was part-time making very little money. And I was pressure washing houses every morning for quite a while I was part-time in radio, but I was making small changes along the way, you know, while I was working two jobs, even one job, manual labor that I didn't enjoy at all. I was able to think about that as a stepping stone, realizing that it wasn't for forever. And it was just kind of a part of me moving and growing and changing and getting to where I wanted to be. And so just an encouragement to you folks out there who are maybe working two jobs, or currently in a job that isn't super fulfilling, or actually you don't like at all. Keep working towards that ultimate goal of a career change or moving up in your job. Just because we think you can find a level of fulfillment in what you're doing right now doesn't mean that you shouldn't create goals to move yourself forward in a way that is going to be better for you and your family.
Joel, if you still had the same career or the same job that you did when you filled out your first W-4, what would you be doing right now?
I'd be running the drive-thru at Chick-fil-A, buddy.
Would you really?
Nice. Yeah.
I've heard you talk about Chick-fil-A before. I wasn't sure if that was your first.
That was my first legit job. I mowed lawns too, but that was like obviously super on the side with $20 cash handouts.
Pay me under the table, cash only. I'm a kid.
Don't tell the IRS, but I wasn't filing tax returns on that money.
Yeah, if I kept my original job, I would be a cart boy at a golf course.
Those are good first jobs, man. I feel like,
yeah, driving around the golf cart, spraying them off, getting them clean, free riding all over the place like you just do when you're 16 and
nothing else to do.
Are you able to just do whatever you want and you've got wheels?
Yeah, Matt, those first jobs were super fun. and honestly, really valuable, I think, in learning a little bit about cultivating a healthy view of work, even working just in those early years.
But luckily, we don't still have them.
Although I tell you what, I would go back to my job as photo lab technician at Eckerd Pharmacy in a heartbeat.
Oh, I've never heard you talk about that one.
That was really fun.
Nice.
Basically, I got to talk to people about their vacations a lot.
Share that one next time.
Yeah. All right, back to the beer, Matt. Hawaiian Christmas Land by Little Cottage Brewery. Our pal John, who brews beer out of his garage. And this is a stout conditioned on vanilla beans, coconut, macadamia nuts, and Kona coffee.
I guarantee that this is the best garage beer that anyone is making out of a unconditioned room where they also store gasoline and lawnmowers. I'm assuming he has those things in his garage because it's just normal garage stuff. But yeah, but the quality of beer that he's making on his own is just constantly blows my mind.
So. Yeah, this one, another outstanding beer of his. And we both used one word to describe the beer at the beginning of the podcast. And my word was oily. I tell you, honestly, it's more of the texture.
Okay, yeah, I was gonna, the weight.
The weight, the way
viscosity,
the way it poured, the way it hit your tongue. It's very oily in just kind of its essence. The flavors are amazing. They pop. And you kind of get a little bit of all those things I read out. Especially, I feel like the macadamia nuts.
Yes.
It really sticks out.
Yep.
It's a really fun beer because I don't think I've ever had one that tasted quite like this.
Yeah, dude. I'm totally with you on the macadamia nut, the vanilla. A little less on the coffee. It's not sort of one of these kind of bitter chocolate stouts. It's this sweet decadent, which is why I said decadent. Is that what I said, right?
That was it.
But it feels decadent. It's a dessert beer in a sense. And I think us sharing a 12-ounce bottle, like we each are putting down 6 ounces of this, is perfect. It's like a perfect dessert chocolate, vanilla, macadamia nut, cake, cookie combo deal. I don't even know, but just all the flavors coming together. It sits heavier on the tongue like that, but there's enough flavor there to warrant that heaviness. And because of that, man, I think this is an amazing beer. And yet again, totally impressed by our buddy John.
Yeah, so thanks, John. And fun to drink this Christmas beer with you, man, during the season.
I mean, basically, everything's better when you drink beer. So Christmas just got better.
All right, Matt, let's get to our final thoughts on the topic of cultivating a healthy view of work. And man, it's a huge problem. Most people just don't think intentionally about work. And we think that's where you need to start. And the two main points that will kind of help you reframe your idea of work are that work is simultaneously both a wonderful thing and that it also isn't everything. You have to be able to hold both of those realities at the same time in order to kind of develop that proper view towards work.
That's right, Joel. It's a balance, right? And so some things to keep in mind when you are developing your own healthy view of work is to consider the fulfillment that you currently have in your work by taking stock of what you are actually doing. Appreciate those things. Is ask yourself the question, do you have a life outside of work? You might find that you're finding too much of your self-fulfillment in your work and too much of your identity is tied up into that.
Just like our pal Elon Musk.
Yeah, you don't want to spend your night sleeping under your desk at work, right?
Nah, that's not good.
But just, yeah, make sure that you've got other stuff going on. And then lastly, we're not saying that you need to be complacent. Be ambitious and challenge yourself. There's a lot of opportunities out there, whether it's within your current company or what you're doing. If your work just needs some slight tweaks, or if you find yourself in a position where you're not happy at all with where you are in life, it might require something a little more drastic, like a completely different career. But just keep in mind that the grass isn't always greener on the other side. All right, everyone, thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. Our home on the web is houseofmoney.com. And up there, we'll have pictures like we normally do of our beer. And also, too, like Joel mentioned, on Instagram at howtomoneypod. We like to have some behind the scenes action up there, as well as other stuff that we are thinking about. So be sure to check that out.
Yeah. And if you like this podcast and you found the information here helpful, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button as well. All right, buddy. Until next time.
Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.